Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. Who better to give us an intelligence briefing than a man who, for a time, was an intelligence analyst with the Texas Department of Public Safety down in his native state of Texas. His name is Todd Benzman. These days, he is a senior fellow at the Center for Immigration Studies. Absolutely superb outfit. He is a very active contributor to the public policy debate, notably through an outlet run by my friend Steve Emerson, the Investigative Project on Terrorism. Todd, it's so good to have you back. Welcome, sir. I noted that at the investigativeproject.org, you had a piece the other day about a subject that we've touched on from time to time when you've been with us, namely that the prospect of a Joe Biden presidency, should it in fact eventuate, would involve, as you put it, ending the Trump travel ban, which would portend return to immigration security challenges. Remind us about the nature of that travel ban and why anybody would think it a good idea to undo it.
Right. So that was one of the very first things that President Trump put in place was by executive order, was a ban on travel from countries of national security concern. There were seven initially. It's 13 now. There was litigation that went to the Supreme Court that enabled that policy to go forward. It essentially restricted, very tightly restricted, travel from places like Yemen and Chad and Libya. Not all of them were Muslim majority countries, also Venezuela and Myanmar. And the reason given for the policy was that we are unable to do security vetting on the individuals that are coming and applying from those countries. And quite a few of them have turned out to be terrorists or people that had hidden connections to terrorist organizations in those countries. We just simply can't call up the Syrian government, the Assad government, and ask them for a background check on their refugees is the problem there.
Well, you could, but you wouldn't rely on what you got from them, that's for sure. And more to the point, Todd, I think it's important to say that part of what was of such concern is that these countries are characterized by governments or at least societies in which what I think of as Sharia supremacism is generally operating. And jihad flows from the doctrine of Sharia. And so we are inviting, were we to bring such people into our country, as the Obama-Biden administration previously did, more and more of such folks to enter. Even if we had some understanding of their background, I think it's fair to say it would be a problem. You have also, of course, been warning about what's been happening of late in Europe, where the migration of some such Sharia supremacists is clearly exacerbating an already fraught situation. Talk a bit about what we've been seeing happening there and the cautionary tale that it presents for us.
Sure. And it is very much a cautionary tale because really the same set of circumstances face the European Union governments as face our own with these, that they are debating over whether to allow lots of migration, much of it over their borders illegally, and asylum applications from the same countries that we in the United States currently have travel restrictions on. That doesn't mean that they can't cross our borders too, and they do, but it all goes to the same issue, which is that we don't know who these people are. They're coming from nations that are steeped in ideological jihadist teachings in their schools and their masjids and mosques, and, you know, their people's entire lives are just, you know, they're marinated in this ideology. And so they're coming into the European Union. And as we've seen over the last 5 or 6 years, nonstop terror attacks from one end of the continent to the other, right up from, you know, Paris and Brussels in 2015 and 2016, right up to the present day, where we're seeing beheadings in the streets. They just can't seem to get a handle on it. And it's given rise to, you know, it's a legitimate debate in Europe as to whether or not to allow this kind of migration and not to do more to stop it, given that people are coming from nations like that, where, you know, there's a higher risk. There just simply is a higher risk.
It's an overdue debate, and I'm not sure how fully engaged it is even yet, because the pressure has been so enormous in the European Union, Todd Bensman, as you know, to accommodate, to submit, in fact. And one of the groups that is active in pressing for that submission, of course, is the Muslim Brotherhood. And I guess it's important to say to our audience, when people wonder why on earth would Joe Biden be wanting to admit more jihadists into this country were he to become president, it is at least in part because of his deference to, his desire to accommodate, to appease, to enjoy the support of the Muslim Brotherhood in our own country. I don't know if you can comment on the extent of that problem, but it's very striking and very troubling to me.
Right. Well, we saw during the 8 years of the Obama administration, and to a certain extent, the Clinton administrations before, it seems to be a Democratic sop to its left wing to engage, actively engage, and I'm talking about full access to the White House, with Arab, I'll put in quotation, among other agencies.
Homeland Security, the military, intelligence community.
Yeah, absolutely. With Arab American community leaderships, which not leaderships, but self-proclaimed leaderships, which very often are tied to the Muslim Brotherhood in America. And it's not going to be any different with the Biden-Harris administration. They have what's called the Joe Biden and the Arab American Community, a plan for partnership. It's on their the Biden-Harris website, explained in detail. And my reading of the plan for partnership with the Arab American community is that we are going to see, once again, the doors of the White House and the FBI and DOJ and all of the other institutions of Homeland Security opened to this influence. So expect that, and go look at the Arab American community plan for partnership.
Todd Bensman, we need to talk more about this, and we look forward to doing so with you in the near future. Also about the latest clash over funding for the border wall, which is playing out as we speak. Those are topics for another day. Thank you for your time on this one, and stay well, my friend, and keep up the terrific work you do at the Center for Immigration Studies. Next up, we'll speak with Morton Klein. We'll talk about the policies of the prospective Biden administration towards the Middle East, and yes, the Muslim Brotherhood's involved in that, too. That and much more, straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom. With Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back, and a special welcome to Morton Klein, the president of the Zionist Organization of America, one of the most important organizations of any kind, let alone as it stands as the preeminent advocate for the U.S.-Israel relationship in the United States. But it's an extraordinarily important outfit, and it has benefited from Mort Klein's leadership for many years. He is, I'm proud to say, among other things, keeper of the flame from the Center for Security Policy, and a remarkable man and ally in the fight for freedom and security here and in the Middle East. Mort Klein, it's always good to have you back. Welcome. So, Mort, speaking of truth-telling, one of the things that I've always admired about you is that you are fearless in pointing out unpleasant truths. And one of them, well, I think we'll probably get into several of them, but one that you've featured in a recent release that the Jewish News Syndicate picked up was your strong concerns about one of the early appointees by a man who is not officially the president-elect, let alone in a position to actually be forming a cabinet. Yet Joe Biden has tapped a woman by the name of Karine Jean-Pierre to be his press secretary, should he attain the White House. Tell us what she's about and why you have such concerns about such an appointment.
Well, first of all, he tapped this woman initially. She's been the chief of staff to Vice President, potential-elect Kamala Harris. So she's been working with them. This is a woman who was a senior advisor and the spokeswoman for George Soros' MoveOn.org. George Soros is one of the most vicious anti-Israel people on earth. He's openly claimed that he's against Zionism, and he's spent money in every way he can to undermine Israel's survival and Israel's policies. Cause anyone who cares about Israel deep concern about what types of policies Joe Biden is going to promote. And I can tell you, by the way, Joe Biden spoke at a ZOA national dinner 15 years ago because the person I honored wanted him to speak. It was not my choice. And in that speech to ZOA, he didn't mention a single pro-Israel statement. Zero. I went through his whole speech to write about it. The only thing he said that's somewhat pro-Israel is that one should never criticize Israel publicly. Otherwise, he said nothing. He's been hostile. He's not been a friend of Israel for all the years he's been in Congress. He's always been against Israel building in Jerusalem or Judea and Samaria, promoting a state, a fervent supporter of the Iran deal, a supporter of the resolution that Israel, all land past the 67 armistice line, is occupied territory.
And a man who has thrown in, it seems, very directly with the Muslim Brotherhood and its various front organizations in this country in the course of this election. And they presumably will be trying to capitalize on that in his future appointments. But just back to Karine Jean-Pierre, Mort, do you anticipate that having a George Soros MoveOn.org activist as the press secretary of the White House would translate into further and very unsavory drive towards policy towards Israel and towards the U.S.-Israeli security relationship that would be deeply injurious to both countries?
We're going to have potentially a woman who's going to be translating his policies to the media in ways that are always hostile to Israel. So Biden is obviously very comfortable with that because of his own positions in Israel, which are not that favorable. This is a woman, by the way, who orchestrated and bragged, condemning AIPAC for being human rights abusers and opposing human rights.
The American-Israel Public Affairs Committee.
She condemned AIPAC for ruining the Iran deal, saying by being against the Iran deal, it means you hate Muslims. That's the way she placed it. She condemned people who attacked Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib, these vicious Jew haters and Israel haters. She condemned those who criticized these terrible people, and she condemned Israel as committing, listen to this, war crimes against Gazans by defending the border that Israel shares with the Hamas-supported, the Hamas-run Gaza area.
A border across which and under which, of course, the Palestinians have been waging war against Israel now for quite some time, including since it foolishly gave up that area to them. Mort, let me just quickly touch on so many other concerning appointments that have been announced so far, just to get your quick take on them. Again, you're looking at this not just as an advocate for the U.S.-Israel relationship, but as an American patriot as well. Tony Blinken as the Secretary of State, Jake Sullivan as the National Security Advisor, Linda Thomas-Greenfield as the nominee to be the next ambassador to the United Nations, not least John Kerry in a role as czar for climate change. And then, of course, there's Kamala Harris herself, who has been deeply problematic on so many of these scores. Just what do you make of this lineup? And it's still unfolding, of course, but what we know of it so far.
Kerry and Blinken have always favored and worked to pressure Israel to make one-sided concessions to the Palestinian Arabs. They've pressured Israel not to build in Eastern Jerusalem. In fact, they've used the word condemned. They condemned Israel for building in Eastern Jerusalem. not to mention, of course, condemning Israel for building Judea and Samaria. They're fervent supporters of the Iran deal, a catastrophic deal that will enable Iran to get nuclear weapons now in less than 10 years. And they fervently support a Palestinian state here 27 years after Oslo, even though the Palestinian Arabs pay Arabs to murder Jews, name schools, streets, and sports teams after Jew killers, promote violence and hatred of Jews in every aspect of their culture, and they want to set up a terrorist state? No, these people are the total opposite of the Trump administration, which understood Israel's difficult situation with a Palestinian Authority regime who doesn't want a state, but they want Israel's destruction. So I'm very, very concerned about the people that he's already decided to have as part of his team. And a woman named Rima Dodan is now deputy director of the Office of Legislative Affairs, who works closely with CAIR. She has legitimized murdering Jews. She said suicide bombing is the last resort of a desperate people. What do you expect? Condemned the fact that the 9/11 attack, she said, was because we support Israel. And by the way, Al-Qaeda never even mentioned Israel as one of the reasons why they did this.
That's shocking. Mort, let me ask you, my old boss Ronald Reagan used to say, personnel is policy. What you've just described in terms of the proclivities of various folks who, and you're not just speculating about this is on the basis of their actual track record when in government in previous administrations. What I'm interested in is how does that actually likely translate into policy changes? Again, were they to come to power? Specifically, more, talk a little bit, if you would, about the peace process that has actually borne fruit under Donald Trump, namely that between Israel and states in the Gulf and in Africa. What is likely to happen to that very successful policy approach, do you think, were Biden to become president?
The Arab states are now petrified that they do not have a partner in America that will do all they can to prevent Iran from getting nuclear weapons. And they will be much less likely to make deals where they need America's support in these deals. And with respect to moving forward in the possible peace, here Trump has made it clear to the Arabs that there will be no progress or success of any sort unless they finally accept Israel as a Jewish state, and they will get nothing otherwise. They were on their backs, and they were ready to start negotiating. Now, with Israel, on the basis of real objectives of actually having a real peace, and now they've already given a list of demands to Biden: stop all building in Judea and Samaria and Jordan, set up a Palestinian state, move the embassy back to Jerusalem, don't recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. These are non-starters for Israel. And so the potential for a peace has now come to a complete halt. It is now impossible. Nothing good will happen.
When you say the Arabs, are you talking about the Palestinian Arabs?
The Palestinian Arabs have already given a list of demands to Biden, impossible demands.
Except they may have reason to believe that he will try to support them, which in a way is worse, because this will simply further intensify, unfortunately, the hostility towards Israel and make the idea of a real and durable peace that much more problematic. And more, just on this question, you mentioned earlier that Palestinians have been paying for people to murder Jews. Until Donald Trump stopped giving money to the Palestinian Authority, that was our money, at least in part, that was being used for those kinds of murders. Do you anticipate that Joe Biden will start making American taxpayer money available, even if it's used for that kind of purpose in the future?
Biden has publicly said he's going to reinstate the $750 million to the Palestinian Authority that Trump has stopped giving to the Palestinian Authority. And now they're going to be playing games. The Palestinian Authority will stop directly giving money because our law requires this pay to slave issue to end before any money can be given. What they will do is stop giving money directly. They've already said they're going to offer good jobs to every Arab who've murdered Jews. They're going to offer good jobs in their administration. So they're going to get the money in a different way. So yes, the thought of giving money, of course it is, and to give money to a terrorist dictatorship. Abbas has been there for 15 to 18 years, whatever it is, without any elections, and a regime that refuses to even say they accept Israel as a Jewish state, has refused to negotiate for 10 years with Netanyahu. Bibi's been begging them to negotiate. They won't even come to the table. We should have nothing to do with this regime. They should know they'll get nothing unless they transform their society and their policies. And now Biden is accepting their policies, almost all of them. He said he will not move the embassy back.
Yeah, we will be following this very closely, as I know will you with the Zionist Organization of America. We appreciate your clarity on what's at stake, and we will be very mindful the kinds of admonitions that you've been expressing should a Biden presidency eventuate and such individuals start making policy in his name. Stay tuned on that, folks. Mort, thanks for your time again. Come back to us again soon, if you would.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. And it is always a pleasure to say it's time for one of the highlights of our week here at Secure Freedom Radio, which is our visit with Diana West, a great author and essayist. You can find her books at places like Amazon that carry The Death of the Grown-Up, American Betrayal, and not least, The Red Thread, a book from the Center for Security Policy Press, of which I am very proud. She is also to be found at dianawest.net, and of course, each week here at Secure Freedom Radio. Welcome back, Diana. It's good to have you. You picked up on something that caught my eye, but has been mostly ignored, it seems, as so much news about this 2020 election, namely that the Federal Elections Commission chairman has said, I guess, repeatedly that he believes there has been fraud in this election season. And he's quite supportive of the idea that legitimate accusations, as he calls them, must be taken to court. Were you surprised that Trey Traynor arrived at this conclusion, or more to the point, that he's speaking so forthrightly about that conclusion?
Absolutely not. I think he's doing his job. The thing that is surprising and I think very perplexing to people is that this man, who is the senior elections, the federal elections official in the nation, is not being paid attention to across the media, across the public square. I mean, it's an extraordinary statement where the Federal Election Commission chairman, you know, FEC, sort of goes off our tongue very quickly, but that is what it stands for, is saying that when you don't follow the law in election situations, that makes an election illegitimate. And we can start citing chapter and verse on different areas, counties, precincts, where election counting centers, where election law was not followed. And this is the job of the legal team and various lawyers engaged in this same effort to make sure our election had integrity and to take it to court and take it to the people so that we understand what is going on. But it is hugely significant that someone in his position is very comfortable and very outspoken in making this extremely obvious but somehow lost point clear. When the law is not followed in an election, the outcome is illegitimate, and this is what we have to test.
Yes, and the fact that the public would not have confidence in an illegitimate election is also something of such importance to, you know, the future of our country, not least, especially as we were just talking about with Mort Klein. If there are major changes in policy, quite potentially far-reaching implications for our national security as well as for the common weal, it's so important that address these things forthrightly and, yes, in courts of law where the evidence can be properly presented and evaluated. And I wanted to turn to a clip from something Sidney Powell, a woman who appeared at a press conference with other members of the Trump legal team. She subsequently said not to be part of that team, but she's clearly pursuing in her own capacity lawsuits that will address specifically the arguably most egregious sort of fraud in this election, namely that involving the electronic voting machines themselves and their software and what perhaps was done to manipulate their results. Let's listen to this quick closing clip from that press conference Sidney Powell addressed last Thursday.
And I want the American public to know right now that we will not be intimidated. American patriots are fed up with the corruption from the local level to the highest level of our government, and we are going to take this country back. We are not going to be intimidated. We are not going to back down. We are going to clean this mess up now. President Trump won by a landslide. We are going to prove it, and we are going to reclaim the United States of America for the people who vote for freedom.
So, Diana, that was a very forthright throwdown, I think it's fair to say. Interestingly, at least implicitly, against both Republicans and Democrats who may be implicated in this misconduct with respect to these voting machines. Give us, first of all, your sort of appreciation of Sidney Powell and the role she's playing at the moment, and we'll get down to some of the particulars after.
Well, I call Sidney Powell Lady Justice when I write about her. And I think that that really says it all. She is someone who's standing up to the swamp, to the institutional corruption. And yes, that entails both political parties. We know that. She knows that. She's pursuing that. And yes, it points to the complete subversion of all of the departments and agencies in our government that should be protecting us from this very kind of corrupt election procedure that we have just witnessed. The election was rigged. The evidence keeps pouring forth despite the media blackout on these kinds of matters and despite the kind of slow rolling of this and this weird spectacle of watching this fraudulent presidential team being assembled over in Biden world. I mean, it's a very ugly moment in American history. Sidney Powell comes on the world stage, on the American stage specifically, to stand up for all of us and he's become the symbol of this effort to expose the whole thing, which will entail exposing corruption, institutional corruption, in the Democratic Party, in the Republican Party, both. And I think there will be tremendous fireworks ahead that will be bringing us not just heat, but a lot of light.
We hope so. And to this point, Diana, as she says herself, this isn't just about this election, this particular race. This is really about the prospects for ever having a free and fair election in the future if we don't get this mess cleaned up, as she put it. Would you speak to that particular point? Because I think especially this news blackout is so outrageous, to say nothing of, beyond the blackout, it is the actual insistence on the part of many in the press that there is nothing to see here. There are accusations of fraud, no matter how many affidavits are assembled, how much evidence is forthcoming. There is no evidence. There's nothing, as I say, to be seen or done about this. This is, it seems to me, a betrayal of a basic trust and of the sort of constitutional premise under which we have a free press, is that they would do their job. They would be independent. They would be, if not always objective, because they would have points of view, of course, but taken in its totality, you would at least have them doing their job of informing the American people rather than disinforming them. Visit with me about that a little bit, if you would, Diana, because it's a very central piece of the problem that Sidney Powell and others are now trying to reckon with.
Well, you know, it's a chronic problem, and it just has been weaponized to a point of you know, almost blowing up the entire country when the press, as you say, doesn't just operate in a media blackout bad enough, but actually supplants that blackout or supplies that blackout with disinformation. They are the disinformation media, and they trample on the public's right to know. This is you know, a basic, as you say, their basic trust with the American people. In terms of the election being about more than the fortunes of one man, Donald Trump, that is the most important part of this entire crisis. It is not just about whether Donald Trump personally wins this election. It is about whether the 70 to 80 million Americans who voted for him, cast legal ballots for him, are forever disenfranchised, making elections in this country as laughable as elections in North Korea or Albania under communist rule or the actions of the Supreme Soviet under Brezhnev. I mean, we are a laughingstock at the moment with a rigged election that is being foisted on us by all of these subverted institutions, the so-called swamp, Washington, the political parties, the media, world leaders, the globalists in the world leadership community rushing to validate Joe Biden as the next president before our process even goes forward. I mean, it is a maelstrom. It is a vortex. But the truth of the matter is, and I think these, we are Trump country. This legal vote shows that this is who the American people are. And it's up to us to keep the boil going, to keep our anger up, and not to be scammed and not to be done out of our rightful place in history as free American citizens to choose who leads us. And that's why it's much more than Donald Trump per se. It's about the entire country and who we are as a people and whether we will ever be a democracy again.
Yeah. And it's also about policy. Diane, I was talking a moment ago, as I said, with Morton Klein about some of the personnel that Joe Biden has tapped on the presumption that he is going to be the next president of the United States, the president of the United States at the moment. Donald Trump, I think very reluctantly, but is now acceded to allowing some transition processes to go forward, even as he preserves his options to contest this election in court, of course. What do you make of the personnel that we've seen identified so far, and what kinds of policies do you anticipate they will be pursuing, should he in fact take the White House?
I have to say that I, you know, we could rip that, but I have to say that I am still so outraged by this notion that an administration could be installed by criminal software that I'm not even there yet in terms of parsing this rogues gallery that is assembling before our eyes. Yes, we know what it would be in terms of really aligning us back in the globalist orbit. The great reset of the World Economic Forum would be something that we would be joining and adhering to. This is an organization and an ideology that essentially further strip free people of their sovereignty and puts us into a socialist world run by billionaires and corporate interests, which we would already be in if we accede to this fraudulent process. It's a horrific prospect, and I don't know that anybody in the Republican world that is currently deserting the president and currently patching things up with this fraudulent other side actually understands how bad things will become. I think they think it's back to business as usual, meaning before the age of Trump. They don't realize that these people are playing for keeps, and there will be no more Constitution, there will be no more Bill of Rights, and there will be no more elections in any sort of free and fair sense. We will no longer choose our destiny.
A grim prospect indeed, and one that further validates the effort to ensure that the returns on this election are actually based on every legal vote being counted and not those that aren't, a subject to which we will turn in a moment with Kevin Freeman. Stay tuned for that and more straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back, and so is Kevin Freeman. I'm very pleased to say the host and proprietor of Economic War Room with Kevin Freeman on Blaze TV. You can find out how to get access both to its terrific video content and also its battle plans at economicwarroom.com. Kevin is also, of course, the author of two terrific books, Secret Weapon and Game Plan, as well as the driving force behind a terrific blog site, globaleconomicwarfare.com. Kevin, it's great to have you back with us, as always. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Frank.
In addition to all of your work in the economic battle space, Kevin, you have thrown yourself into a very timely and urgently needed project. We've talked about it a little bit before, but I'm anxious to give our audience an update on everylegalvote.com. Remind us what its purpose is and how it's going.
Well, first, let me say everylegalvote.com is squarely in the economic warfare space. Whoever occupies the White House and controls the reins of Congress controls literally trillions of dollars. And we have a long history of foreign governments and others, domestic enemies as well, trying to take control of those dollars by taking control of the election. And what we saw in this past election is more irregularities, more anomalies, more strange things that point to election fraud than any modern election, perhaps any election in the history of the country. And so EveryLegalVote.com is a coalition of citizens that are focused on making certain that the election is clean and fair in multiple ways. And it's a website. It's sprung up almost spontaneously from a group of interested people, and it is now reaching millions of people as a go-to source for information on what happened in the election and what we need to do to clean it up.
Yeah. I'm a huge fan of what you've been doing and very appreciative of it, and wanted to just say that I think particularly what you just touched on is of especial importance, Kevin, at this moment, and that is action steps that individuals can take, whether it's reporting on fraud that they've seen themselves or whether it's finding ways to help get corrective action taken. Can you talk a little bit about the sheer volume of actions that have been taken as a result of EveryLegalVote.com providing that service, and to what ends?
Well, we've a number of actions. As you mentioned, first, you can get educated, which is an action to learn about what's happening. Then you can report fraud. You can take an affidavit and you can say, I feel that this happened, and you can start the affidavit process on our site. But you can also take action demanding that our duly elected officials do something significant to address this. I mean, if you live in Arizona, for example, there's a petition now for Arizona legislators. We have other petitions that we've done, and total combined, more than 2 million actions have been taken by those following our website. And this has started from nothing. I mean, in 72 hours, this thing was launched. And it's just a little over 2 weeks. I think it's a couple of weeks old now, today.
Amazing. And on this point, Kevin, the Arizona State Legislature, I understand, may be called back into session by the governor, which would be a terrific accomplishment if so. In some measure, I'm sure, a function of the people that were turning up the heat on those guys. There's a lot of bad news at the moment for those who want to ensure that every vote counts, every legal vote counts, and who want to make sure that fraud is rooted out. One of those who has been particularly suffering the slings and arrows at the moment for standing up for those propositions is a woman by the name of Sidney Powell. I think she's pretty much a household name these days, but remind us of who she is and what she's doing and what people will be able to do at EveryLegalVote.com to show support for her.
Sidney is a true warrior, and what she's doing is she's standing up for the good people of America. What's happening all across America is people looking at the election returns and realizing these are not right. There's something terribly wrong here, and Sidney is the voice that stands up and says, that's exactly correct. These are not right. And she is the Joan of Arc of our generation in this sense. She's the one who's led the charge. She's the one who has suffered, as you said, the slings and the arrows as people have shot at her. But the American people know better. They know that she's standing up for the truth. And the chips may fall where they may, including some Republicans who may have been complicit in this really fraudulent election process. It's got to be fixed. It's got to be fixed now. And Sidney Powell has put her career and her livelihood and her life on the line to make sure that happens. And all of America owes her a tremendous debt of gratitude.
Well, I agree. And she is, of course, an extraordinarily accomplished attorney and appellate prosecutor, for that matter, for the federal government for many years. And fearless, as you say. I understand that there will be an opportunity for people to thank her for what she's doing on behalf of America. I think of her as America's advocate by going to your website, EveryLegalVote.com, Kevin, and I commend you for that as well. It's a very important thing to support those who are standing up for all of us. They don't get it often enough, heavens knows. Kevin, let me switch gears, if I can, to another topic back in squarely your economic war room mode. There is a report in the Wall Street Journal today that in the aftermath of the president's executive order, essentially prohibiting American investors and entities from holding the stocks and bonds of Chinese military-tied companies doing business in the United States and their subsidiaries. Some of the index compilers, as they're called, are now having second thoughts about the enormous investment they've been encouraging Americans to make in such companies and other Chinese Communist Party front outfits as well. Talk a little bit about what is precipitating this rethink as you see it. Is it in order? And what's likely to come of it, do you think?
Well, first, the index compilers, as they're listed and they're mentioned in the Wall Street Journal, they fit either in one of two camps. Either they, what we see as a marketplace or enemies view as a battle space, and so they just thought, why not? We'll just invest in China. If they were aware of the Chinese activity that they're taking place, their military gearing up for nefarious things against ours, their human organ harvesting and all the other horrible things that the Chinese Communist Party has perpetrated, then they're complicit. And either way, it doesn't matter. They've been awakened by President Trump, who's put this executive order stopping the investment in military companies. And all of a sudden, we realize we have no transparency, no visibility into their accounting practices or actually their actual practices, what they're doing. So it's essential that all of America wakes up. The problem, the fear that I have is that this is an executive order, and Vice President Biden, if he takes the White House, would rescind that order because we have to hold him accountable if that's the case, because there's all of this complicity that's shown in the Hunter Biden laptop and everything else. He has been an apologist for China for years. So this is a serious problem. It's something America needs to do.
Well, I second all of that, needless to say. And what I think is particularly striking about this is that the index compilers, the indexes, have been among the most indifferent to what, as you rightly point out, our enemies think of as a battle space, and have been waging economic warfare against us for decades, to the tune, by some estimates, of $3 trillion they've gotten out of our capital markets. You can do a lot of very, very dangerous things if you're the Chinese Communist Party for $3 trillion, needless to say. And so, Kevin, when you see these signals being sent, that seems to suggest they're not anticipating that a President Biden, if there is such a thing, will rescind this, and nor should he, obviously. I mean, it's obscene, really, to think that we are underwriting companies that are directly tied to the Chinese military, for heaven's sakes. But to the extent that he is likely to, you know, even be inclined to do that, I do think that he will be so badly compromised, having the unsavory connection to the Chinese Communist Party that he does, both through his son and in his own right. I think it'll be very problematic for him to go there. Kevin, we have to leave it at that. I'm afraid there's so much more to talk with you about. We'll look forward to doing so after Thanksgiving. I hope you have a blessed one, my friend, and thank you so much for the time that you give us each week. It's deeply appreciated. My best to you and your family, and to the rest of you as well. We'll be talking with you again tomorrow, same time, same station, I hope. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.